am so excited to have. Two guys who are tough. You watch them play, they're tough. I love the toughness. Two guys who every year have gotten better. Every year. Look, I'm inspired by that. Work, off season, off court, work. Two guys who are MVP guys. There's only a few games we need to need. We need to win the last game played during the NBA season. That's the game we got to win. Kawhi said something when they won the championship this year about the Larry O.B. The only thing that matters is the Larry O.B. When I first got here, I think I called it the Lawrence O'Brien. But from now on, it's all about the Larry O.B.
Get through it.
It's a good excuse. It's a good excuse, and if somebody reaches out or says something to you that you don't want to deal with, it's good. You almost guilt them. It's like, it's Yom Kippur today. I saw you reached out to me yesterday. I was observing Yom Kippur.
I'm confused. I'm old. What's up?
If millions of people don't want to deal with it, then fuck them. That's worth it to us. That makes sense to me as a position. What doesn't make sense to me as a position is pretending like none of that's happening. It just makes no sense. It makes no fucking sense.
I just watched Fatal Attraction yesterday.
Yep.
Good movie. When they first get together, he's like, all right, I gotta go. And he's giving her the sweet talk, and she says to him, that's when you first start seeing that she's crazy. And she says to him, I'd rather have you just tell me to fuck off.
Fuck off.
Please don't justify yourself as pathetic. You tell me to fuck off, I'd have more respect for you.
And then he goes, all right, fuck off.
All right, then fuck off.
Fuck off.
And then she kicks him in the ass.
And you get out!
That's what that reminds me of.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
Okay, welcome to the House of Strauss. We are so excited to have on Jovan Buha of The Athletic, who's been covering the Clippers. I also want to give a little shout out to Jade Hoy. He's been doing a magnificent job producing the podcast. But, I mean, look,
thank you.
I'm excited to have Jovan on here. I have a personal stake in his career. I remember when he was a young whippersnapper blogger, and he's always somebody who's asking for advice, foolish enough to ask me on occasion, but other people as well. And I feel like I'm seeing him flourish as the Clippers are torn asunder. This last article that he wrote about the firing of Doc Rivers is great. I'm trying to remember what the title is. I just closed the window on it. What's the title, Yov?
An inside look at the Clippers and Doc Rivers' decision to part ways after another collapse.
Boom. There you go. And I love it. It's those details that you get from covering a team. I really enjoy on how you zeroed in on this awkward substitution interaction in the regular season when they were playing the Sixers. And I want you to get in on that or get into that. I first want to say or ask, in the wake of this shocking Doc Rivers firing news, did you think it was going this way at any point? Was there any point that you thought to yourself over the course of following and covering this team that Doc was getting fired?
I think on paper it made sense, just to blow a 3-1 lead in that fashion. I wrote after Game 7 that might have been the biggest collapse in NBA history when factoring in You know, they led those games 5, 6, and 7 by double digits, including games 5 and 6 in the second half, you know, and obviously it wasn't a Cavs Warriors or Warriors Thunder type 3-1, you know, blown lead with it being in the conference finals or finals. But, you know, the Clippers were in control. They were in the driver's seat. They were up 3-1. They had those big leads in those games and they just collapsed. And, you know, so I think on paper, you know, had it been a different coach, there would have been, I think, more of a call for him to be fired and maybe that expectation. But, you know, Doc Rivers is, you know, objectively one of the most successful coaches of all time. You know, he's 11th on the regular season all-time wins list. He's 7th on the postseason all-time wins list. And he's one of the most famous coaches, right? Like he is a celebrity unto himself and has kind of cultivated that gravitas even more so in LA. You know, you see him out on TMZ and, you know, in the summer, he's out at different hot spots around LA and, you know, he's you know, friends with a bunch of famous people. So, you know, he kind of had this aura to him that was greater than the average NBA coach, even the average successful NBA coach, right? Like, I think in terms of fame, you know, he's probably right up there with Pop and Kerr. You know, I can't think of a more famous current coach right now. So, I you know, from the conversations I had had with different people in the organization, outside of the organization, leading up to this, nobody saw this coming. Everybody thought, you know, the expectation was he's going to get one more year. You know, he's Doc, he's earned it. He led this team through the you know, Donald Sterling saga. He was kind of the face of the team after Blake Griffin and Chris Paul left. He helped recruit Kawhi Leonard. So there was a lot of factors that, you know, kind of were pointing to Doc deserves another chance. He deserves a shot at redemption. But ultimately, the Clippers over the last couple weeks in conversations between Steve Ballmer and Doc and in the front office and Doc and just kind of evaluating where this team wanted to go and what they kind of envisioned their future, they just determined they were on two completely different pages. And you know, what Doc felt in terms of roster construction and player development and just kind of the style of play versus what the front office and ownership wanted, they were two completely different things. And I think that's ultimately what led to this divorce.
That's just so shocking. When you look back on last season, when you look back on how they overachieved, how Steve Kerr was telling me that he was almost jealous of Doc because this was a team that just played hard every night, had such a good esprit de corps. Is that how you pronounce it in the French? I don't know. To go from that to he's celebrating. I also read the Ramona and Ohm article on it where he's celebrating and pumping his fist because they got Kawhi and they got Paul George and fired within a season. It is just, it's incredible. I was certainly taken by surprise, even if some of the context makes sense. As you noted, 3-8 in potential series clinching games. To say nothing of the multiple 3-1 collapses. Do you think that has anything to do with him? Is this all just an unfortunate coincidence, or is there anything to the Doc Rivers approach that leads one vulnerable to losing these playoff series?
There was someone I was talking to a few days ago about this whole situation and just kind of the future of the Clippers. And they put it, I think, in a good light that it's a small sample size, right? Like Doc has been to the postseason 16 times and, you know, 8 of those times he's advanced, 8 of those times he hasn't advanced. And, you know, he's won a championship. He's made the finals before. He's made the conference finals before. Just that success didn't translate to LA. If you look at the bulk of his postseason success, it was with the big three in Boston. You know, the Lob City teams all consistently either met or underachieved expectations. You know, they were the winningest team to never make a conference finals. And then you had the similar thing with this team where, you know, this was even a different level where these guys were the actual favorites. Like Lob City was never really the favorites. They came up with the Spurs and the Thunder, and then the Warriors had their run at the kind of the tail end of Lob City. So, you know, the Clippers were kind of snake bitten, I think more so during that era. But this era was like, you know, on paper, everyone's had them as the favorites, you know, Vegas,
yeah,
analytics, just, you know, personnel around the league, like universally. Everyone said if this team was healthy, they were going to win the championship. And for them to
I felt that way.
Yeah. And for them to lose again, not losing to the Lakers, not making the finals, and you know, maybe you play Giannis in the Bucks and Giannis is the best player in that series and you lose, like, that would be one thing. But to lose in the second round, to blow a 3-1 lead, to lose to a team like Denver, who the Clippers felt they were better than, you know, they were embarrassed to lose that way. You know, I just think there's something there. And that was what was told. They didn't go into specifics of what exactly it is. You know, I personally think from observing this team and observing that team, you know, I covered that 2015 series in which they lost to Houston. I think it's more of Doc's inability to adjust mid-series. He is very stubborn, and he is someone, you know, who I wrote about it in this series. There was a sense internally that Ivica Zubac, who you could have made the case during the regular season, was better than Montrezl Harrell, despite Trez being the sixth man of the year. But especially in the playoffs, like, all the numbers indicated, you know, Zubac had the best, you know, net rating on the court with Kawhi and PG, and, you know, just by himself. And really the on-off numbers between Trez and Zu were so stark. It was just an insane difference. And, you know, despite the team talking to Rivers and asking him, you know, why aren't you playing Zubac more? Why doesn't he have a bigger role? Basically, they were just met with Trez is better. And, you know, Trez unfortunately had to miss a month in the bubble. And, you know, his grandmother got sick and eventually passed. And that was a really sad tragedy for him. But he came back, you know, visibly a different player. He was not as effective on either end. He looked a bit out of shape. He didn't have that same athleticism or explosion. So really, it was kind of Doc almost just holding on to what Trez had been in the regular season. And it ended up costing them. And really, he went down swinging with that, where, you know, he'd actually been lowering Trez's minutes throughout the Denver series. And then in game seven, played him 26 minutes to Zubac's 14. So I don't think it's as simple as, you know, Zubac versus Trez was the reason Doc got fired. But I do think there was something to Doc always had his guys. And more often than not, it was veterans or older guys, you know, instead of younger guys. And that was kind of a trend that the front office and ownership had kind of realized. It was like, you know, if you look at our track record under Doc, he hasn't really developed any young guys. He hasn't empowered them, given them key roles in rotation. Even last season, they basically had to trade away Avery Bradley for Doc to fully embrace Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as the starter and a go-to guy. So I think ultimately they just kind of looked at the future and were like, I don't see what's going to change here. And, you know, maybe an extra year together, maybe we tweak the roster a little bit, but it was more of a process, you know, issue than the results. And that was what was, you know, I wrote that as well. Like, it wasn't just that they lost, it was how they lost, what led to them losing. And ultimately they concluded that was more on Doc than anybody else.
I love that you zeroed in on that, because I think to the casual fan, that would be shocking. The idea that Zubac's not playing him enough would be such a fracture point, because they're probably focused on all the coverages on Paul George. What the hell? That's the majority of the coverage. If you're watching First Take the next day, I don't think they're talking a lot about Zubac needing more time, but that is the type of disagreement that creeps up and the resentment builds, where management, basketball ops, wants a guy to get more looks, wants him to get more run, and the coach is reluctant to do it. You see it on every team, even the Warriors at their most successful. That is a classic dynamic in the NBA. The other granular thing you focused on, aforementioned, was this little window, this little moment in that game against the Sixers, as just illustrative of some of the issues. Can you expound on that and talk about what that represented to you?
Yeah, so there was a game February 11th, right before the All-Star break. The Clippers were in Philly in a game that was hyped as a potential finals preview. And boy, were we wrong. So there's this moment with 12.9 seconds left in the first half. And, you know, most end of first half possessions are kind of meaningless, like you forget them, you know, sometimes you score, whatever, like it's not the biggest deal. But there's this moment here where 12 seconds left and Landry Shamet is checking into the game for Kawhi. Not really sure why he was checking in for him, because I went back and looked at the box score. Like, Kawhi wasn't in foul trouble. You know, I don't really know what Doc was doing. Maybe he just wanted to give him, like, you know, a little bit of extra rest before halftime. But as Kawhi's walking to the bench, he, like, demonstrably demonstrably gestures towards Doc and starts yelling like, you know, there's 12 seconds left. We're down two. And this was rare for Kawhi. Like Kawhi, you know, sometimes would make faces and stuff, but we know he's a robot. He's the Terminator. Like, you know, that is his persona. And for him to kind of show up Doc publicly in front, I mean, he was right in front of the bench, you know, right in front of the coaching staff. For him to do something like that, I think was a big deal and kind of a sign of, you know, some of the friction there inside the locker room. And Doc immediately retracts his decision and instead subs out Lou, who Lou then becomes upset. And you see Lou almost walking to the corner like you're putting a toddler in timeout. And he kind of like, you know, pauses for a second. He looks at Doc. He sticks his arms up and kind of like puts his head down and walks to the bench. And again, that could just be a minor, you know, some people might chalk that up to just a mundane disagreement or just a minor moment in a game it's meaningless, doesn't really matter. But several people I spoke with said that they felt first off, they remembered it. And second off, they felt that interaction kind of encapsulated the issues at hand here, which were Doc's inability to manage all of the egos and personalities in the locker room. And then him more adhering and kind of giving that preferential treatment to Kawhi and PG, you know, two guys who probably earned it, but that rubbed some of the locker room the wrong way. And especially looking at the old guard of Lou, Montrezl Harrell, Pat Beverly, you know, those guys think very highly of themselves. They're very confident role players. I've said this before. I think if you were ranking like the 10 most confident role players in the league, the Clippers probably have four of them. In Lou, Trez, Pat Beverly, and Marcus Morris. So, you know, having guys who consider themselves basically like all-star level, you know, near max guys and kind of telling them to take a back seat to two actual stars, I think that was where some of this friction was with this team all season. And, you know, I reported it back in January with Sam Amick. You know, we went into some of the chemistry stuff, and I think it really bore out in the bubble. You know, you saw, you know, this was probably the worst case scenario for the Clippers as far as an ending of them just flaming out that way. And I do think from some of the stuff that's come out from other outlets, from some of the stuff we've reported, like a lot of this was from the locker room tension and really just Doc's inability to figure out the right balance of new versus old, you know, catering to Kawhi and PG versus stroking the egos of some of the older guys. And just, yeah, I think ultimately he ended up kind of losing the locker room.
So, you write that from Rivers' perspective, the Clippers roster was flawed. That stood out to me just because nobody else thought that. Everybody thought, oh my God, this is a super team. I thought they have too much wing talent to lose if healthy. Why would Rivers think that the roster was flawed?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, I do know that he did feel like they needed a better lead ball handler, a better point guard. You know, and if you were pointing out a flaw from the roster, you know, they didn't technically have that guy. And especially with looking at Kawhi Leonard's prior success in San Antonio, he had Tony Parker. In Toronto, he had Kyle Lowry. You know, this season, the Clippers almost made Kawhi Leonard their point guard. And you know, he had a career best season with assist percentage and assists. And, you know, he's really stepped up as a playmaker. And I think that's been the biggest development in his game. But he's not a point guard. You know, he's not LeBron James. He's not Luka Doncic. You know, few are. And
he's not Gilgeous Alexander as a lead ball handler.
I mean, yeah, that was part of it. Like, you know, I do think you look back and had they not made that trade, you know, they might have been, I mean, they certainly would have been set up better in the future, but you could maybe even argue in the short term too. I think, I mean, clearly reading between the lines, he was not the biggest Zubats fan. You know, he pretty much, it was like no matter how good Zoo played in the regular season, he was basically stuck at, you know, capped at 18 to 20 minutes a night. And there were multiple games where he'd have a really good defensive stretch. You know, he actually had one in Denver against Jokic. And then he'd just get benched for the last 15, 16 minutes of the game. And we'd ask Doc about it. And he was just like, you know, Montrez was doing more out there. And he was always pumping up Trez.
Please tell me there was some Croatian journalist who was grilling Doc on this.
There was a Polish one last season grilling him about not playing Marcin Gortat more.
I just remember in the NBA Finals in 2015, there was – I believe, a reporter from Russia who would just grill David Blatt over Mozgov's lack of minutes. He's like, Mozgov, I can't do the accent. I just do a generic Eastern European accent, but he would just grill Blatt, and Blatt would deliver a withering stare. Well, that's unfortunate. Croatia should have done better by that and sent over some angry investigative journalists to demand answers.
Yeah, and I think to your point, like, Zubats doesn't really pass the eye test. He's this lumbering 7 foot center. I mean, in some ways, actually kind of resembles Mozgov in like just his build, his kind of frame, his style of play to an extent. But when you actually look at the numbers, like, he was one of the best fits, on the floor with Kawhi and PG. And statistically, like, he's one of the best rim protectors in the league. He's one of the best offensive rebounders, and he's one of the best screeners. And, you know, I think he is someone that was actually more impactful for this team than given credit for. And like, if you were asking the average fan to rank the Clippers, you know, 1 through 10, they're 10 rotation guys, I think most people would have Zubats in that 7 to 9 range where, you know, from my opinion and from talking to people around the team, like, he's closer to that 3 to 5 range. Like, you know, there were people that thought he was actually the third best player on the team. So, I think that was, again, where some of that disconnect was, where, you know, Trez was putting up the numbers and he was a sixth man, and, you know, he's dunking and he's rolling, and he has the Lou Trez pick and roll, and, you know, he passes the eye test. You know, Trez is an energetic, fun player to watch, but all the numbers pointed in Zubats' direction. And I think, you know, seeing that play out again in the playoffs, it was just kind of jarring to see Doc continue to go to Trez at the end of games, or go to Trez to defend Jokic, and Jokic just have his way with him. So that, again, there's multiple things here, but I do think, you know, that was one of the bigger things I was told.
We started with 22 teams heading down to Orlando, and now we are down to the final two. That's right. Basketball's final two teams are set to square off to see who will be crowned basketball's champion. And there is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To celebrate basketball's championship, DraftKings will have millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs all week long, so get in on all the action now. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy basketball is easy to play. Just pick 6 players, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for 3-pointers, rebounds, assists, and more. There's no better way to put your basketball knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars. With millions of dollars up for grabs this week, there is no better place to have skin in the game than with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code RUN to get a free shot at millions of dollars up for grabs this week with your first deposit. That's promo code RUN to get a free shot at millions of dollars with your first deposit, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
I think the name that seems like it should be coming up a bit more in the aftermath of all this is Kawhi's. Because am I wrong to think that if Kawhi Leonard said, look, I'm getting out of here, if you fire Doc, Doc would still be here because Kawhi's contract's coming up. How much of this is that the star players ultimately either didn't want Doc there or were fine to see him go?
I think it was more fine to see him go. I think one of the more interesting things to me with this whole situation was Chris Haynes had a report last week, that report about Paul George and Montrezl Harrell getting into it in Game 2 of the Denver series. And towards the end of his story, he had a couple sentences there about Kawhi basically still trusting Doc, and the expectation was that Doc was going to be back next season. And that to me, kind of, again, reading between the lines, was like, okay, you know, Kawhi wants Doc back, Doc is going to be back. But clearly that was not the case. They did run it by him, and I don't know exactly what he said, but clearly he didn't dissuade them. And something that I noticed that I put him in the piece was like, I think it's telling that no Clipper has publicly thanked, defended, or even acknowledged Doc's departure since this happened on social media. And they have some active guys like Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Paul George. There are active guys on social media who will post a bit, you know, Landry Shamet, Ivica Zubac. Like, none of these guys have acknowledged it. And you would think with how beloved Doc was from the outside and kind of the perception of him, you would have had some players at least tweeting something. But
that's, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you would think that even perfunctory, even if you didn't mean it, right?
Yeah.
Just because it's the thing you say of, hey, thanks for what you did. It's very surprising, especially for how long he's been there, just the acknowledgement of it. I don't know what's behind that. Is it out of the question that maybe they were advised not to, or is that just, you think, reflective of their general feelings towards him?
I think that could be a part of it. I think another part is that there is so much up in the air with this roster right now. I hadn't included this in this piece, but I'm going to have it in a future piece. But, I was told that there are going to be changes with this roster, and not necessarily small changes. There could be some bigger changes. So I do think, looking at next season's Clippers team, you will, see Kawhi and Paul George. But aside from that, I think anything is on the table in terms of them moving pieces around, trading guys, letting free agents walk, seeking upgrades in free agency. So, there also is an element of, like, I think some guys just don't know if they're going to be a Clipper, within a couple months. So maybe they're kind of staying out of it, there is some obviously politics behind the scenes. And with Doc not returning, maybe there are guys who just think, hey, I better not say anything. But it's fascinating. Like it's weird to me, I especially a guy like Lou or Trez, right? Like Lou had this second act to his career and really played career best ball under Doc. Like Doc empowered him as, hey, like you're our closer, you're our go-to guy. Those 2 years there, the first post, Houston trade years, he was their leading scorer. He was their go-to guy in the clutch. Like, Lou played his best basketball under Doc. And then Montrezl Harrell was potentially out of the league. Doc had said they were considering cutting him when they traded for him. And after seeing him in some of their open runs, he was like, this guy's way more talented than I think even Houston realized. And they were like, this guy's going to have a role. He's going to play. And, if not for the pandemic and the bubble, like Trez might've been making 15 to 20 million annually this summer. So, those two in particular, I think, who were empowered by Doc, who were given bigger roles than they had been given in the past. Like, it's surprising. And I do think there's more to it.
Yeah. And I remember when Mark Jackson got fired, multiple Warriors players did do some sort of acknowledgement, most notably Steph Curry. So there are times where that happens. If I'm going back to that analogy, by the way, if I'm going back to the Mark Jackson Warriors, I do wonder if the Clippers didn't take the Nuggets seriously enough and then Doc gets fired because they're still not taking them seriously enough. It's still this assumption that this Nuggets team was nowhere near good enough to beat them. And I wonder if it's a situation like, speaking of the Nuggets, when the Warriors beat the Nuggets in 2013 and then George Karl gets fired because, oh my God, you got upset in the first round to these lowly Warriors, and then that core, that roster is actually a championship and beyond roster. I do wonder if some of this is a reaction to getting beaten by a pretty damn talented team that we're just learning to take seriously. But obviously, as you're noting, that there are other issues at play. I wonder, because I'm always fascinated by these dynamics, what's the relationship, or what was the relationship between Ballmer and Rivers, as much as you could get a beat on it?
Yeah, I mean, they were close, and this was something that, was discussed. I think this was years in the making, because I think even going back to 2015, I think you could make the case that Doc blowing the Houston series, that was probably a fireable offense, right? Like that was inexcusable to have that. I mean, that was even a worse collapse, arguably, than either game 5 or 6, because they had that 19-point lead. So deep into the third, basically going into the fourth. And then, it was fluky with Josh Smith and Corey Brewer, where I think the Denver stuff was more sustainable. It was actually, Jokic and Jamal Murray. And like, it was their best players beating them versus just two role players getting hot. But, I think there was an element of like, how much are we letting the name Doc Rivers kind of carry the weight here? And if this were not Doc Rivers, would he still be the coach? And how would we view the situation, right? Like, so I do think that again, if you just, you know, go to Basketball Reference, look at Doc's postseason history, it's really impressive in Boston, right? Like he won the title. 2009, they make the, you know, go to game seven in the second round. 2010, they make the finals, or maybe a Kendrick Perkins injury away from winning it. 2012, make the conference finals, push the Heat to seven. Like he really maximized those 3 or 4 years there where, like, you know, maybe they should have won another title, but they were always in the conference finals. Like they always had a chance. That just didn't translate to LA. Like he, again, like those Lob City teams should have at least made one conference finals. Like the fact that they always flamed out, you know, part of it was injuries. They had some injury luck, but you know, again, I think
part of it was Chris Paul trying to draw some kind of silly full court
game the system. Foul. Yeah. I mean, but again, that Lob City team also had chemistry issues, like, you know, and I think looking at sort of the body of Doc's tenure in LA, it was like, okay, in the regular season, we're going to get 50 to 55 wins. We're going to be, you know, we're going to have home court advantage. We're going to be at contending level theoretically. But what's going to happen in the playoffs? Why are Doc's teams always so disconnected in the locker room? You know, why can't he get his stars on the same page? Why is the ceiling with his teams the second round? Like, why can't, you know, it's now happened three times where they lost in the second round. And really, frankly, I mean, you could throw the OKC series up as them kind of blowing that series. Like they won game one in OKC. They should have won game five in OKC, which, as you just said, was more on Chris, but like they could have won that series as well. So really, like, there's something, you know, I don't know what it is, but there is something about, you know, Doc's teams in LA where mentally they were weak. Like they crumbled and collapsed the deeper they went in the postseason. And, you know, another thing that I thought was really interesting was, for as bad as the Nuggets series was, you know, some people internally viewed the Mavericks series almost as you know,
yeah,
as
that was interesting.
Like, you know, because they were just like, Kristaps Porzingis missed half the series. Luka was on a good ankle for half the series, and we still got pushed to six games. And there was like a sentiment of, hey, if Porzingis was healthy, like, and Doncic was healthy, maybe we lose this series, or it probably goes seven at least. So I think that was when the alarm started to kind of sound a little bit of, you know, okay, this is like troubling. We should not be being taken to six games by the Mavericks for as good as they are. And again, maybe to your point, like, maybe this team thought too highly of themselves. You know, maybe I do think they underestimated Dallas, and that translated a little bit into the Denver series. But yeah, I mean, maybe they underestimated both of those opponents, and, you know, both of those teams are better than we gave them credit for. Like, Dallas had the third best net rating, in the West. So, you know, on paper, like, that was a little bit more of an even matchup, but, I mean, yeah, I just think there's so many factors here, but overall, if you look at Doc's body of work in LA, it was usually disappointment in the postseason. And I think ultimately after 7 years, they just decided it was too much.
Well, let's start looking to the future with them, because they have more money than God. I mean, Steve Ballmer has
seriously
over $70 billion. That's a lot of money. I can't really. It's 100 times the amount of money that Vivek has out there in Sacramento. And Vivek is a pretty wealthy man. So that's just some context. He is extraordinarily wealthy, even among people who are extraordinarily wealthy. It does seem, though, I do wonder, Kawhi Leonard, fantastic player. Obviously, he's proven that he can win championships. He's done it with two teams now. But is there something to the idea that he has been empowered, or perhaps this whole thing is built upon him, and that is a tricky situation chemistry-wise and complicates the search for a coach going forward? Is there anything going on around that situation?
Yes, to put it shortly. I do think that, again, looking at you know, his previous situations, it wasn't just that he had point guards that were also leaders on the floor. It was more of, there was established chemistry and culture there. And I think one of the mistakes the Clippers made was they, you know, misestimated how the fusion of last season's team with two all-stars would go. And, you know, it's a weird dynamic when your two best players are not necessarily your leaders. And, you know, most people, you know, going back to last season, the two leaders in the locker room were Pat and Lou. And that sort of translated into this season, but those two guys kind of felt displaced as well. And it was kind of like, well, we're like the leaders, but we're not the two best players anymore, or arguably the two best players. So I do think there is something to a hierarchy within a team and, you know, kind of players falling into their roles and sort of the, you know, usually the best players are the leaders. Like you look at the Lakers, LeBron James is the leader. You know, Anthony Davis isn't as loud of a guy, but that's okay because LeBron's kind of taking that leadership role. But when you have the Clippers, Kawhi, you know, I think has worked on his leadership, but I would still not say is a good or great leader. And then you have Paul George, who similarly is more of a quiet kind of guy who's not going to say much. So it's like, who's saying stuff? And that's something that I've was hearing all season was like, there are times when people need to say stuff in the locker room, and that just wasn't happening with this team. And I think that is something that they're really going to have to figure out, because a lot of times it was Doc, but you know, players will tune out a coach at some point, and players will only listen to a coach so much. So, you know, that's going to be an important factor with whatever coach they hire next. But I don't really know how you fix that leadership issue. You know, maybe it's trading for a Kyle Lowry, a Jrue Holiday, like, you know, throwing the farm at those teams, hoping they accept your best trade package, even though the Clippers don't have assets. But, you know, I think there is going to have to be some type of infusion of player leadership. And I don't think it's going to be Kawhi or PG.
Is there any resentment within the organization? I guess if there is, they just need to get over it. Of if Kawhi handles things differently, they have so much of a better position. You know, is this something that is roiled them internally looking back?
I don't think with the higher ups. I think it maybe some of the staffers, yes. You know, I do think that, you know, this would probably be solved to some extent if Kawhi just was more of that extroverted, fiery leader who gave speeches when appropriate and called guys out and really was just kind of more vocal. So I do think there's an element of like, if he just did that, that might fix some of these issues. But I think it just comes with the Kawhi package. Like, it's not like the Clippers traded for him thinking he was Kevin Garnett or something, right? Like they knew what they were getting. I just think that they thought the partnership between Kawhi and PG and the rest of the locker room would go over smoother than it did. And it just never did. And that's, to me, the biggest reason why you are going to see a different roster next season. You know, I don't know how dramatic it's going to be, but I do expect, like, I think 3 or 4 of the 10 rotation players are going to be gone. You know, they're going to have to mix and match some pieces because, you know, it clearly didn't work this season. And really the fact that they were able to be a top 2 seed, a top 4 net rating, you know, make the 7th game of the second round. Like, that to me was more of a testament to their talent than anything, because internally, I do not think this was a close group from everything I've heard. You know, there were a lot of issues. I think some of it's come out. There's going to be more coming out. And, you know, I think the fact that they even had the success that they had speaks to, you know, how much success you can have with talent. And I think the best depiction of that was Kobe and Shaq and Russ and KD. But, you know, this was kind of a version of that where, you know, it wasn't as bad, but they still kind of were successful in spite of their lack of chemistry, not because of it.
That's the thing. It's the whole is not greater than the sum of its parts when it came to the Clippers. I think that's true of the Warriors in the Durant era, only they had so much talent that it didn't matter, that your whole could be less than the sum of your parts and it still adds up to more than what anybody else has. But it is the nature of super teams, and especially now, and there was just always something with these Clippers that felt rather mercenary and joyless, and it just wasn't connecting in the way that, you know, it's an interesting collapse to me in this way. I felt as though there was just something so inorganic about the Clippers that it would almost be a shame if they did win, because it would mean that that's how you win. You know, it's just mercenary. I know people would say the same for the Durant Warriors, and it might be a fair critique, but it felt like it was even more so the Clippers, that it's you just stack up enough talent, you win, and there's really nothing else to it. There's no story there in the way there would be if the Nuggets ended up ascending to win the championship. There's no real story. It's just big bank, take little bank. You know, that's it. There's nothing else to know. And in that way, I think there's at least a silver lining in their collapse. I do want to know, you know, a little bit moving on from these Clippers, they're $70 billion frauds, I think we've determined, until they get it together. What was this like for you, man? Because this is a very strange situation to cover this Clipper team, to be following them for a while, to be really one of the few people on this beat, and then suddenly have this roller coaster of massive expectations, the favorites, pandemic, season on hold, now season happening in the bubble. What has this been like for you as a young reporter?
It's been a roller coaster, but I would say that, you know, it's weird because I felt like the team's kind of attitude almost rubbed off on me, where I did enjoy last season more. Like, last season's team was more fun to cover. You know, just undeniably, like, just this underdog story, and you have the Warriors playoff series, and they win a couple games at Oracle, and it was just a fun season. And you know, that was my first season traveling on a beat, so you know, maybe I'm just remembering it with rose-colored glasses here. But you know, this season, really from the start, things were just kind of weird. You know, we didn't really see this team until, you know, mid-November. You know, they were resting guys in preseason, and then the load management stuff started in the beginning of the season, and Paul George was out. And I just think overall it was, you know, I never had a full grasp on the Clippers. The Clippers were always this idea. I wrote this before the bubble, like, the Clippers always existed to me more in theory than in principle. Like, you know, we had an idea of what they were. And really, if you were picking them to win a title, you were betting on what they could be rather than what they were, because what they were was an inconsistent team all season. And, you know, I think some of their metrics, which, you know, I included in the story from talking to some people, like, they felt that it kind of belied the eye test, where, you know, sometimes they'd win games by 40 points and that's going to juice your net rating. Right. Like, you know, but then they'd lose. They lost a lot of close games to good teams. And you know, through the season, there were some troubling trends of their inability to win certain close games against other good opponents. And but for myself, like, I would say having that spotlight was nice. You know, I'm sure that was kind of a sliver of what the Warriors dealt with during those 2 years. But, you know, having stories kind of go viral and getting that attention. And, you know, I didn't have stories, you know, seeing it on the ticker of ESPN or Fox Sports, and having Stephen A or Nick Wright or whoever, like, debate, you know, a story I reported, was a really cool experience. And, you know, that didn't happen last season. There wasn't that appetite for Clippers content. And even so this season, you know, it wasn't honestly as much as I thought. You know, I thought they'd be a bigger story. I think it was surprising to me.
People like when they fail. That's what we've seen in our numbers, not to give too much away. Negative Clipper story is like positive Laker story. And those two phenomena, that might be related. I get the sense there are a lot of Laker fans who like to guzzle Clipper tears. Just throwing a theory out there.
No, you're totally right. Like, I think I sometimes get more engagement from Laker fans hating on my content or retweeting the negative content, right? Like, so there was some stuff during the playoffs where, you know, Paul George had some, I'm going to think of the best, like, he had some questionable quotes post game in some of the games where, you know, just talking about some of the, like, saying it wasn't a championship or bust season, or you know, if he had made more shots, the result would have been different, like, stuff like that.
Somebody should have told Doc Rivers that, by the way.
so you know, tweeting some of that stuff out, like, Laker fans just ate that up, and it was like, you know, some of those tweets got like thousands of retweets, and if you looked at the quote tweets, like, it was all Laker fans just trolling him, laughing at him. And Paul George kind of has his own corner of NBA Twitter of, you know, there are a lot of people who don't like Paul George, but
Is that all? I mean, so I have theories on this stuff. I feel like one's reputation in the social media era is very much influenced by what teams you play for and what teams you've spurned. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people say in the social media era, it doesn't matter who you play for. It doesn't matter. You might as well be in Memphis or New York City and whatnot. I don't think that's true, in part because what happens is this. If you play for a team that has a massive reach, like the Los Angeles Lakers, that's like having this huge standing army that amplifies your message, your exploits, an order of magnitude above what's happening for other teams. And also, if you spurn such a team, say the Lakers, if you're Dwight Howard in the past, or Paul George, by just not going there after seeming like you would, man, do they heap scorn upon you as well. So I think that that's just part of this dynamic where Paul George, there's nothing about him that's all that significant or especially hateable, even though he does have questionable quotes and there was the playoff P and he doesn't do as much in the playoffs as you'd want. But I think so much of the hate is informed by pissing the Laker fan base off by dangling the idea that he might go there. That's my theory.
I'm totally with you because that's been the biggest engagement on anything I tweet about Paul George. It's always Laker fans going at him. And it's interesting because Kawhi kind of did the same thing, right? Like not even just in free agency, but you know, when he was forcing his way out of San Antonio, he was trying to go to the Lakers and maybe that was more in the Lakers that they weren't able to get him. But you know, Kawhi almost like was a Laker twice and didn't end up going there and did kind of string them along in free agency last summer. So, you know, for whatever reason, they kind of respect Kawhi and don't PG. And interestingly enough, that was some of the sentiment out of the Clippers locker room with some of the stuff that I've heard and has been reported just in terms of players kind of more buying into Kawhi's preferential treatment rather than Paul George's.
Well, yeah. I mean, Kawhi is a better player. He's accomplished more. That makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I think to a certain extent, maybe Paul George is dying for Kawhi's sins, where Kawhi is a little bit bulletproof and just hard to really lay a glove on because he just doesn't give you a lot. So that resentment of not having joined that Laker fans feel a little bit towards Kawhi is going to get heaped and transferred extra on the Paul George. So, yeah, I don't even think we talked about him. We were getting out of Clipper land, but Paul George, what the hell? That's my question for you. What the hell?
It's tricky because, you know, he did struggle with mental health issues in the bubble. And anytime that is, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to know how much of it was that versus just, you know, some of the playoff P struggles or, you know, who knows, maybe he gets really bad anxiety or something, you know, during the play. Like, I don't want to speculate. I just, you know, once he opened up about that and shared that, I think you did see some of the criticism of him kind of shift. And ultimately it came back in game 6 and 7 and, you know, Twitter was getting its jokes off. But, you know, I do know from some of the conversations I've had, like he was dealing with stuff. You know, it was, you know, that wasn't just a fake narrative or fake excuse that he put out there to kind of just, you know, quiet his critics. It was something that he was dealing with. So, you know, that's where it kind of gets tricky, where I just don't know how you separate that from his struggles. You know, I feel like they are intertwined. I don't know what the pie chart looks like, but, you know, it is disappointing. And you know, you did see him kind of break out of that towards the end of that Dallas series. And you know, he had that big game 5 and then he had a decent game 6 and then kind of was, he actually was better than people think in the Denver series. I know there's a big part of, you know, Clippers Twitter that felt he was the best player actually in the Denver series for the Clippers. But, you know, he did have that game 7 performance and he did have that shot that hit the side of the backboard and almost, you know, would have taken out a courtside fan had there been fans there. So I don't know. I do think that it doesn't look good that they invested this much in him. I do think the PG trade already was looking a bit shaky. You know, he wasn't healthy in the regular season. He wasn't the OKC version of him in the regular season. And, you know, he had some good moments in the playoffs, but he was very up and down. And I think projecting out, like, I just wonder how he fits in with this core long term. And it's a tricky proposition because you can't just let him walk necessarily unless you're confident you could get another star, because obviously a big reason of why Kawhi even signed with the Clippers in the first place was them getting that second star to attract him and to give him that trust and that confidence that they were going to build a sustainable contender. So I don't really know where they move forward, but you know, PG's almost 30, or actually rather he is 30. And you know, I think looking at this team beyond next season and beyond the season after that, I don't know how they're going to feel about him. And this front office has shown with the Doc, you know, departure, with the Blake Griffin trade, Tobias Harris trade, even the PG trade, like they are cold and calculated at times, and they will make those difficult decisions more so than maybe any front office currently, right? Like I think Boston kind of has that reputation, but the Clippers have made a lot of difficult decisions over the last few years in favor of the franchise. And I would not be surprised at some point down the road if they do move on from Paul George. And this is pure speculation, but I would not be surprised by it in the way that other franchises might hold on to him and might be like, you know, this is a sunk cost, but we have to, you know, retain him and re-sign him. Like, I don't know if the Clippers operate that way. I do expect him to be a Clipper for the next few years, but I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't.
Who are they getting as a coach, man? Last question. Who are they getting as a coach?
I think the favorite right now is Ty Lue. You know,
so strange because he's part of the he's theoretically part of what happened as an assistant coach. Yeah,
it is weird. It is weird, and this would also be the second time this has kind of happened with Ty Lue, where the you know, he was an assistant and then the head coach is let go and he's promoted. You know, I don't know if there's anything to read into that or not, but you know, he is Doc's protege, so there's part of me that's like, you know, maybe he feels like it's a little backstabby or just kind of a weird, awkward dynamic to replace his mentor. And you know, like, that's where part of me is like, I feel like it would make more sense if he went to Houston or Philly or New Orleans and took one of those jobs. From what I was told, he's definitely a strong candidate, someone they're going to consider an interview, unless he takes a job within the next few days or so. But one thing that I was told that was kind of surprising was, I think looking at the situation from afar, you'd be like, okay, this is a daunting win now situation. You need to come in here, manage all these egos and personalities. You need to deal with the win now pressure, basically make the finals at a minimum. Like, this cannot be a first year head coach. But I was told that the Clippers are going to be looking at a bunch of assistant coaches across the league. They are trying to find their own version of a Ty Lue or Steve Kerr or Nick Nurse, you know, coaches who won a championship in their first year. So that's not out of the picture. Like, you know, I think this isn't a great coaching market. You know, once you get past Lue, it's like, does Mike D'Antoni really make sense with this team? Like, I don't think so. Does Nate McMillan make sense with this team? I don't really think so. You know, they're stylistically, you know, very,
you know,
I just don't know. Like, yeah,
you look at the final four, every coach under the age of 50, you know, I wonder if there's something about the league that's making it a little harder for the older coaches, small sample size, of course, but there is something on my mind that there is a change in the demands of the coach. And, you know, the what I remember is Warren Legarry, famous agent to coaches, say teams always overcorrect. I don't know what overcorrecting would mean, what the opposite of Doc Rivers is, but it would make sense that they might be trying to get whatever that is. You would know better than I would. Maybe a guy with no charisma, a very unfamous man with no charisma who treats the media like shit, who instead of saying like Doc Rivers says, that's a really good question, Jovan. When you ask a question, this new coach says, that's a really stupid question. Well, maybe that's what they're going for.
He rarely said that to me. So,
yes. Yeah. This is what's fascinating. Okay. So this is another thing I want to get at right here before we get out of here. I felt like your coverage was fair. It was not sensationalistic, and the idea that the Clippers were, I think, a little bit openly sensitive about it is something they need to figure out for themselves. That's just what I'm saying. I'm throwing it out there. I know I don't have much of a leg to stand on because some might accuse me of. Well, I don't even know what they might accuse me of, but I'm just throwing that out there, Jovan. Just throwing it out there.
I obviously don't want to upset them with my response here. I would say that I think this organization has, based on their, I think really the shocking nature of a lot of their bigger moves, right? Like again, no one saw the Blake Griffin trade coming. No one saw the Tobias Harris trade coming. The Paul George trade, the Kawhi Leonard signing, like, yes, they were linked to him, but they were on paper the third favorite to get him behind the Lakers and the Raptors. And then the Doc situation, again, everyone thought he was going to be retained for another year. He still had 2 years left on his deal. I think the way they operate is very much behind the scenes, you know, in the shadows, privately. And to have some of that stuff aired out, specifically, I guess, with my chemistry piece, like I can see like they are kind of in that OKC San Antonio mold where they are very private. There's not a lot of leakage. There's not a lot of like their strategy getting out with certain things. So I could see why me uncovering some stuff would ruffle some feathers.
Clippers. I don't know if you listen to the podcast, The Clippers or Steve Ballmer, but look, you guys have a relevance problem, flat out. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. The Lakers run you. They're way more popular. This whole secrecy, we're the San Antonio Spurs thing, it's not going to work. You're not dominating a town with no other sports team. You're in Los Angeles. Let Jovan tell some of these stories. Let people in on some of the drama. Helps them connect to the central characters and whatever's going on. Trust me, it's the way to go. I'm just saying.
I mean, you said it. You said it for me.
Well, look, and I'm going to put in a word for all of us. All of us. It's very self-serving. But if the NBA got boffo ratings in this bubble with the reporters kept at arm's length, and yes, they let some reporters into the bubble, but they were behind the glass door. I'm not criticizing any of these maneuvers. I just think that if the NBA got boffo ratings, mega ratings like that, then they would have just kept on doing it and shut us out because we create problems. But they didn't. Their ratings totally tanked. And we can come up with reasons for why, various theories. But I think just maybe, some of what we're talking about, some of what we do, the stories we tell, helps the fans like these teams. So just throwing that in there too, not just the Clippers, but the NBA. Remember, we serve a function, folks. You know, we can help you even when it feels like we're not. You know, when we talk about the fall, it helps us give context for the rise, right? So I'm leaving this conversation on that note. That's the final thought in this very fine conversation. Jovan, you have done an incredible job covering this team. Everybody should read his work. Everybody should check it out. You're an ascending star, and I'm glad that you made time for us. I hope you won't forget about us in the very near future.
Thanks for having me on, man. This was a cool moment for me.
Thanks to Jovan. Thanks to Jade. Thanks to all you listeners. My God, the NBA Finals. NBA Finals about to happen in the fall, which is very strange. Enjoy all of that. Stay safe out there. We will be back. Stay safe, everybody. We will see you next time.
Clippers are about.